fishing. I'm going fishing.
Oh, you guys got to see this.
Sinker line.
I wish we had a video
feed. Fish.
Oh, we've got in the halls of the abandoned halls of commerce here at WKDW. Got to tell you, it's weird because there's nobody here but the three of us.
Right.
And, you know, we're social distancing here. Robert's at one end of the table, I'm at the other, and RJ isolated in his gold and chrome towers of power. But I believe the village people have infected KDW. We've got hard hats. Robert's got, oh God, I don't even, I wish we had a video feed, but I'm kind of glad we don't. I'm not sure you really want to get in this. And just as one more note this week, and that is, remember the continuous responders. The guys in the Circle K, the women in the Circle K, the grocery stores, the people who stock the shelves, your garbage man, all of these people doing these regular everyday job. The little Jason and Ashley who work at the Circle K next to us, the guys behind the counter at Fish and Frank's, all these people are literally risking their health so you can buy a Polar Pop or a, you know, a snack food or something. They're risking their health for this. The people in the grocery store who you're yelling at because they don't have what you want are risking their health so that they're going to put more cereal on the shelf, more toilet paper on the shelf. And when they say you can only have one, how many butts do you got? I really want to know
most when... Most of those have got one big one.
the outbreak of diarrhea comes around, and we have a shortage of nasal spray. That's right. Kind of what this reminds me of. I mean, I have never heard... I don't know of anybody on the news, anywhere else, that said, oh, I got coronavirus, and all I did was poop all day.
Yeah.
Really? Not once. So...
It's a respiratory problem, people. It's not a gastrointestinal problem like the flu is.
Yeah, it's just really strange. But remember, all these people are there for you every day. The truck drivers, the delivery people, and all that. We're not going to be able to get products for a while. So everybody needs to be on plan B. Plan B. If you don't have what you want, get what's there. You know, if you like Kellogg's and all they have is Post cereal, you're not going to die. You know, if you don't have this exact size of what you want in something, get the next thing closest. This is a time for all of us to just say, hey, it's okay. And maybe I don't get what I want. Vinny was at a store, grabbed the can of Lysol off the shelf, just reached up. There's three cans there. And he took a can and was going to walk away, and an old guy grabbed the can out of his hand. You can tell you, the old guy's lucky it wasn't me.
Right.
You know, I would have smacked him with the can.
Yeah, exactly.
So, most of the people are awesome and wonderful and friendly. And here's what's going on in Charlotte County. The problem is, I can tell you what's in Charlotte, but Lee County is doing something different. Sarasota County is doing different things. DeSoto County is doing different things. Now, if you're wondering where all the coronavirus cases and everything are, you just go on any search engine. I use DuckDuckGo because they don't track you. But you go on, you put coronavirus update. You can get lists by the state how many cases there are. When you click the state, you get lists by the county, how many are in the county. You don't have to wonder what's going on. You can literally go on there and look. If it says 3, I'd advise you to think of that as 30. If it says 100, I advise you to think of that as 300. You got to multiply it a bit because they don't know everything that's out there. But the good news is, in Charlotte County, the freshwater parks are sort of closed. Here's what's closed is the amenities. Now, you got to get to what does amenity mean in a freshwater park. You've got beautiful parks like Lake Betty, Audubon Park. They're just all over the place. Ollie's Park. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in Charlotte County where you can go walk around in the sunlight. I just stood outside in the sun having a smoke, and it's wonderful. And UV ray kills viruses, by the way. And if you're worried about getting the viruses off something, set it in the sun for a while. You don't have to have special equipment and Lysol and all that kind of stuff. Florida sun will kill it. Now, if you go to a park, say, let's say Lake Betty, you cannot use the playground. You cannot use the benches. You cannot go into the shelters. You cannot walk on the pier or the dock that they have there. You must stay off of all of those things. But it is legal to walk up to just the edge of the water and fish. You can have your own chair there. You can sit there and fish. But anybody who thought graduating 50,000 attorneys a year was going to be a good idea, well, you wouldn't understand this. But nobody from the county or the state or anybody I've talked to has said that it's a liability issue. But I am willing to bet the county had to close the benches, and you can get a ticket for sitting on a bench in a park. That is a county amenity, and it's closed. It can be a misdemeanor. What does that mean? It means you go to court. You got to pay court costs. You got fines. This is not like a traffic ticket where you just send them money. It's a misdemeanor, which means court, judges, the whole bit. So don't sit on a bench. But I think what they're worried about is somebody sitting on the bench and in the 1 in 1,000 chance they caught the virus from sitting on a bench or a picnic table or touching a county structure of some kind. And then they would get sued. I'm pretty sure that's what it's about. Because why else would they shut down the amenities? To eliminate the legal liability of it, right?
Well, I think also they're talking about eliminating the spread. They don't know how long this virus lives on certain surfaces. I read an article last night in The Guardian that seems to do really well on cardboard. It lasts longer on cardboard than on any other surface.
Actually, I heard it was plastic. That's how this...
Yeah. So, and like they're saying, they don't know because they're all controlled in the lab kind of testing. They're not out there.
What I've heard right now is it lasts longest on metal, then plastic, and then cardboard. So anything is true.
Right. So if you're walking around and sitting on a bench and you've got the virus and you're shedding the virus and then somebody else comes and sits on the bench, they're going to pick it up. They're going to get it on their
hand. Well, at least it would be on their clothes, so they would have a viable chance of transmission that way.
Right. So I think that's probably what the counties are thinking about is how do we just stop the places of transmission that we can. How long is it lots on the grass? I have no idea. You know.
Well, they say a big thing is people's shoes. Now, at Fish and Frank's, we have the front doors open. We want to keep a very high humidity level in the store. Because if someone would cough or breathe, the saliva, which is what you're expelling, just like you got to swallow all the time because, you get saliva in your mouth. It catches with the water droplets, humidity in the air. They become very heavy. Excuse me. They become heavy, and then they fall to the ground very quickly. That's why viruses, flus, and all that in the summer are much less likely than in the winter. The drier the air is, the longer the droplets stay in the air. They don't have anything to grab to make them heavy and make them fall. The humidity and your saliva come together, it makes a very heavy molecule of water, and it falls to the ground. So now they're saying your shoes are a problem. We live in Florida. This is not a problem. If you have coronavirus on your shoes and you just turn them upside down in the sun, in an hour or two, the virus is dead. UV lights, ozone generators. Robert and I both have ozone generators. And we're going to be putting them off in the store to, help maintain. Every single person who comes in, we spray their hands with Lysol if they'll let us.
Right.
Now, not everybody lets you.
No.
What's really weird is we had a guy, and he's some kind of health nut. And he had all these vitamins, and he's eating this, eating that. He has a perfect immune system, and you can't spray Lysol on his hands because it's going to affect his testosterone. Well, I got news for you.
I think it already did, or something else did.
I don't think he has anything to worry about because I don't think women are talking to him.
Yeah.
It's like, good God. Anyway, here's the thing about this Boys and Girls. If you're going to go to Freshwater Park, you can go fishing. You can't touch the amenities. No buildings, no nothing. We have some beautiful freshwater parks. Get out, sit in the sun with your family. Stay away from other groups and other families. They closed the fishing piers because Placida and several other ones, instead of having 20, 30 people on the huge pier, there was 100 and some. The county saw this. People didn't pull up and go, oh, there's too many people here, and drive to the next pier. They said, I'm going to this pier, and didn't go to the next pier. Plan A, plan B. That's what this is about. If you can't have your first choice, go to your second or your third choice. You don't have to, this is what I'm going to do. That does not work right now. This is what I would like to do. Well, that would be okay. That's acceptable. That's the way we got to think of this. But the good news is, if you have a boat, you don't have to settle for what's acceptable. You can actually settle for some pretty cool stuff. And, you know, you can hear this corona garbage anywhere. But I needed you to know about the parks. But that does not include any park with a beach. Beaches are closed. Port Charlotte Beach, because it has the name beach in the park, even though it's just sand brought in with a dump truck, closed. You can use the boat ramp, but you cannot go anywhere else. You cannot walk on a beach. That is a misdemeanor because of all the people partying.
Yeah.
So, you can go out in the Gulf, and you can go first choice, king mackerel.
What if you want a second choice?
Yeah, wasn't that the whole point of this conversation?
All right, no. Permit.
The Gulf, snappers. The Gulf is doing unbelievable right now.
See how I'm treated here, boys and girls?
From 3 to 20 miles out, basically, they're getting king mackerel, cobia, and permit. You know, the guys that are bottom fishing are drifting along and coming up with king mackerel, either skyrocketing or hitting their baits as they're freelining them out the back. Other guys are anchored up out there fishing.
What are they freelining, by the way?
Frozen sardines, or they're stopping and catching on some of the reefs out there. There's a bunch of Spanish sardines and some big thread fins around, so they've been sabiquing those up and using just live bait fish, basically. The cobia have just been showing up like the typical brown ghosts that they are. They just pop up out of nowhere, so there's no one place for them to always be. But they're getting them from 10 pounds, as far as the king mackerel go, all the way up to like 25 is the biggest. But most of them seem to be right in that teenish range, you know, 10 to 15 pounds. Not a lot of giants. Heard of several out by the Mohawk, several out by the school bus. And then even as close as Helen's Reef, which is, what, 3.5 miles
or
something like that?
Yeah, not far
offshore. You know, so you have an opportunity to get all those. And then as you are closer to shore, the Spanish mackerel are mixed in with those, too. So keep an eye out for them.
Some of the biggest Spanish I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen Spanish mackerel as big as what you can find in front of Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, kind of from Marker 5, Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, out in front of there, through Boca Grande Pass, and then out about 3 miles in the Gulf.
Yeah.
I mean, these are close to 30-inch Spanish mackerel. We're looking to see if they're Ciro or King. Most of the pictures we're identifying are Spanish.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Never saw them this big.
No.
I mean, normally it takes a King to get that size. Uh-uh.
Yeah, they're chunky. I mean, several of those pictures, I did a triple take to make sure they weren't Ciros or juvenile Kings also. And 28, 29, 30-inch Spanish mackerel, it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's a big fish for a Spanish mackerel.
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest ones. Like Frank said, it's the biggest ones I've ever seen.
Now, I'm going to suggest if you have a rod you're not using much and you want to go out there, grab a rod that you don't use very much at all, moderate weight, something you can put about 20-pound monofilament on, 15, 20, about what you want for those king mackerel. 15's good, 20's okay. Too much smaller, it's a problem. Too much bigger, it's a problem. But come in and get good, clear monofilament and use that to troll your spoons. Kings and Spanish are exceptionally effective pulling spoons.
Mm-hmm.
But braided line is so expensive, and it does not pull straight. When you put a spoon on a line, it's twisting round and round, like you're taking your finger to one of those old little wooden airplanes with the rubber band on the propeller, yeah. And it's making it more and more and more twisted. Every half a mile you go with that, the twist, I mean, that's a lot of spinning. Even if you use a ball-bearing swivel, it only takes out 80%. 20% of that spin is still going to be there. Now, if you got a lot of money and you want to replace $15, $20 worth of line because you went trolling one day on each rod, all right, let's add this up. This could be hundreds. Instead, grab a couple rods. We can save the braided line, put it on a different spool or something. Put monofilament on. When monofilament gets twisted, it looks like wrought iron. You know, with that twist in it, you can visibly see it. You just cut off your leader and everything, bare line, about 6 feet of it, out the tip of the rod, and then I back the drag down so it's very, very loose, and I start feeding the line out as I idle my boat forward. So I'm idling the boat forward, feeding bare line out the tip of the rod. Now, I don't open the bail, because if it's very twisted and you open that bail and just release line out, you've got one twisted up nightmare knot. But if you just loosen the drag up and feed it out, you know, a hand's length at a time, just keep pulling line off the reel as the water pulls it away from you, get a little bit more than you were trolling, wait a minute, tighten the drag up, reel it all back in. Brand new line again. No twists, no tangles, brand new. It's not a corona cough, it's a smoker's cough.
Right, and the braided line doesn't unravel, right? Once it rocks up like that, it stays that way.
It should. It gets twisted. It would be the same, and I don't know why it doesn't.
Yeah, I don't understand it either.
I've tried three different times to drag braided line behind the boat to get the twist and tangles and stuff out of it. Nothing.
No, it doesn't make any sense to me at all either, because it's the same thing.
It should be exactly the same thing.
You would think.
When something twists, look, when you twist a rope, it gets that same stuff in it. You can just pull it out. Why braid and line won't do it, I don't know. Makes me nuts.
Yeah. It's like an
RJ, you're the most educated out of the whole bunch.
I'm developing a theory. If you got 100 feet of extension cord, the orange extension cord, and you keep winding it the wrong way each time so it gets twisted, once that stuff gets twisted, you can't get it untwisted again. It always has that spiral shape to it. And I think it's because on the inside of the sheath is the braided sheath that goes the whole length of the cord.
Ooh, Robert?
So it could be that the braided line is pretty much, you know, it's like a Chinese finger puzzle thing.
Right.
Once you twist it, it stays twisted.
That's probably the best explanation I've heard.
Yeah, but the way the weave goes together, once you break that weave up, you're not going to unbreak the weave.
That's the most logical sense, because that's what I was thinking of, because I actually wrapped up the extension cord this morning and was thinking about that when we were just discussing it, that, you know, no matter how nice you are and try to wrap it, once it gets that tweak in it, it's always going to be done. So maybe.
Job, guys.
So we're going with that one, boys and girls.
Hey, RJ, nicely done.
It has the most logic to it, without a doubt.
Because I've never been able to even come close to figuring it out, and it just makes me nuts. And I'm not throwing away $10, $20, $30, $40 worth of line because I want to troll a spoon.
Right.
Anything with braided on it, I'm trolling a lure with a lip, a Storm Twitch Stick, a Yozui 3D Fingerling, a Rapala X-Rap 08, the little Strike King bass baits, which are really nice because they're so depth specific. you know, the square bills and the little bubble baits. But you've got all these lures with a lip, and we've been avoiding the spoons because of the expense of the line. So best bet is go through your garage, find a couple rods you don't, you know, use. You know, we've all got a couple. Bring them in. Let's put some 15-pound mono on there. Now you got your Spanish mackerel, your king mackerel, spoon trolling rods.
And I have to say, from many years of fishing for mackerel of all types, there's nothing like using spoons. I don't know of any other bait that works as well and as consistently as pulling silver spoons behind the boat.
Yeah, and
so when we drop that out of our tackle box and we say we can't use a spoon because we're going to twist our line up, you lower the number of fish you're going to get.
And I believe so. The other thing I want to pull is a rattle trap.
Yes, anything that makes noise. We talked about that last week, that these fish are hunting from a great distance. They're hearing things. They're seeing flashes. And they move towards their prey based on the flashes and the noise.
So anyway, that's what we would do. If you got lines with braided, pull a Storm Twitch Stick or a Pal X-Rap 08, Yozuri Small Crystal Minnow. There's the Strike King Bass Lures, you know, that go. And you can get those from a foot deep down to 20 feet deep. And they're small enough the Spanish will hit them. And that's what's nice. Instead of having used the big 10-foot, 15, which are too big for the mackerel to want to chase, you can go to those Strike King bass lures and get your depth with a small enough lure to catch fish. So that's something we haven't really delved into much, is some of the bass lures that are great for trolling in the saltwater. But if you're in the harbor, I'm going to say on the south end of the harbor right now, sharks, right, Robert?
Definitely.
There is. If you're from Boca Grande Pass around Cape Hayes, kind of a line over to Bernstorp, if you're looking to catch something fun, it's all about the sharks.
Yeah, yeah. The black tips have been pretty good down there, along with an occasional bull and still some sandbar sharks inside. The black tips, though, are the most amazing part. And a lot of guys get them confused with spinner sharks. Because they both will jump in the air and they'll both spin and twist and coil up and break your line off in mid-jump. You know, so take your pick on which one you want to call it. But either way, they're running from like 2.5 foot all the way up to 4.5 foot. And then I just got a text here while we were sitting here. The upper end of the harbor is starting to see a few more too.
All right, here's the cool part. Don't take an elephant gun to a rabbit hunt.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, people go out there with 30 internationals and teal D20s. Take your snook or redfish rod, something with a 30 or 3,000 size spinning reel or a 40 or a 4,000, whatever you want to call it. And 10 to 20 pound class rods, 8 to 17, even a 6 to 12. This is where the fun comes in. You don't need to water ski the shark back to the boat. If you got a 3-foot black tip shark on a pen 4-aught and you start cranking the handle, it looks like the water ski vents back in town. I mean, they're just sliding right across the surface. There's nothing there. But do that with a 3,000 battle. Now you got a fight.
And the other difference, too, is when you get the shark up to the boat and it's time to detach from the shark, if you've water skied him in, he's still in really good health.
Yeah, he's still pretty feisty.
He's still real happy and real angry, and it's going to make a big difference in you getting that hook out or at least getting him released. Where if you fought him on a lighter rod and you brought him in now because he's tired, it's a whole lot safer and a whole lot easier to do.
Yeah.
So I agree. Don't water ski the shark in. That's a huge mistake because he's just waiting to see who's on the end of that line.
Well, you brought up a great point, RJ. Here is where we have kind of the duality of fishing, let's go with. What we've got is we are constantly preaching to people, use heavy enough tackle to land the fish in a reasonable amount of time. If you're using a 3,000 or 4,000 reels to try and catch 130, 150, 180-pound tarpon, you're a jerk.
Right.
Because you're going to kill that fish. But on the other hand, as RJ pointed out, if you're using this monstrous tackle and you don't give the fish time to get a little bit tired, you're going to get bit. You've got fish safety and human safety. And that's an excellent point, RJ, because it's a balancing act in the middle. Heavy enough tackle to land them in a reasonable amount of time, but light enough tackle so they're a bit tired when they get to the boat. Not expended, not dire, we're talking a 15-minute fight, not a two-hour fight.
Right. So, no, that's a good point.
But it's finding that middle area.
Well, and you say it all the time because so many people are concerned, well, what if it's a really big shark? What if it was? So what? You know what?
Land him. So what?
You got a really good fight or a really exciting story. You know, if you landed every fish out there that you hooked, why would you keep doing this?
And do you really want to land a really big shark? That's the other side of it, too.
I do.
You know?
He does.
You do, but
this guy's but Robert, you know what you're 20 some foot sharks.
Yeah, well, you know what you're doing, hopefully, if that's what you're going to do.
No, I just faked it really. No, I didn't even fake it very well.
Yeah, but we're out there. But this shark is at least 20 foot long, if not more. Black, like you see those horses on the thing. When he's coming up and going around and isn't very interested, he comes to the surface and his fin is kind of laid over like Free Willy, and then all of a sudden he gets the scent, the fin stands up tight, and he comes at you like a German U-boat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's what Robert used to drag me out to do.
It's because you're the only one I trusted with my life.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that, Robert.
It's still true. Still true in a skinny minute. Yeah. But, yes, he was the only one I would do it with because I trust him with my life, and there's nobody else I can do that with.
Here's one thing.
It's a dangerous thing.
If you're wondering about why I keep going on about people behind the counter at the grocery stores and everything else, I have people that are actually terrified to come to work. And I say, please don't come to work. We are risking our health to do this. You don't have to do this. You won't get fired. You're not going to lose your job. You know, I'll take care of you. But they're afraid. They're literally, you know, this is scary. And imagine how the poor stock boy feels when, or the stock girl or whatever it is, at a grocery store and somebody comes up and is yelling at them because they don't have what they want. Can you imagine? I don't think I'd work there. I don't think I could take that. You sit there, you're risking your health to make sure people can have something. And so it's not exactly what you want. Be nice about it. This is not a joke. And I know from personal experience, I have people literally afraid they're going to get sick and die. And they show up to work anyway. So, you know, I'm only going to keep harping on this because it's true. Be nice. And if you don't want to be nice, make sure I'm not there. Because I'll good teach point. You what being not nice means. So
with all the sharks out there, you know, it's pretty awesome. But the big thing is, if you are going to keep a shark for dinner, you know, you need to know exactly what your sharks are that you're keeping. Because
that's my problem right now. Because we've got a lot of black nose as well as black tips.
Yeah, and then you've got some sandbar sharks out there which look very similar to a bull shark. You know, so
isn't the difference in a sandbar and a bull the elongated pec fins?
Yeah, but if you don't have the two of them laying next to each other, how do you really tell that? The number one thing that will never change is that dermal ridge that's on their back between their dorsal and their secondary dorsal. It's got a little raised ridge down their back, almost
so
like a little
raised ridge you can't keep.
Correct.
But if it's smooth, 54 inches, you're good.
Correct.
And then lemon sharks have two dorsal fins, basically.
Of the same size, yeah.
Of the same
pretty
size.
Pretty close.
Where a bull shark has a big dorsal fin and a small tail fin.
Correct.
Not tail, but what's right in front of the tail?
Caudal fin.
Caudal fin?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I could use to be coddled.
Yeah. Yeah, but
I'm a little stressed out. My jokes are getting worse. Yeah, I mean, every day you got to wonder, is the store going to close? Are we going to have anybody coming in? What's going on? This is getting weird. All right. What? I don't understand
I wrote
this.
That down.
Oyster spawning mullet.
Okay. I wrote that down while you were getting ready because it came into my mind.
David, this is what's in your mind?
Trust me, this is kind of cool.
Okay.
Yeah,
they?
We're ready.
Yeah, oyster spawning mullet.
Hey, and I've got video.
Okay.
So day before yesterday, I got out while it was still daylight. And the girlfriend and I are sitting out back relaxing, watching the water. And she's like, and I'm sitting up by the porch just sitting back. She's collecting plastic out of the water and looking at the water. You know, that's one of her hobbies. But she tells me to come down there because the mullet aren't scared. There's mullet sitting up against the oysters, facing towards the oysters. And then she says, you got to come down here and look at this because these oysters are like puffing out like smoke, almost like a lava vent, you know, underwater. And they're puffing out this little, like they're smoking. Literally, they open up, and you know, when they spit water.
And what were you and Christina smoking?
Mm-hmm. Nothing.
Okay.
So I walk down there and look, and every now and then this oyster would open up, and there'd be 2, 3, 6 mullets sitting there. And they'd spook a little bit from you, but they'd circle right back around and come right back to that oyster. And then it would vent, and this little puff of, like, smoke would come out, and it looked like they were eating it. They'd go right up to it. And these were big mullet. These were, you know, right. 12 to 16-inch mullet. And then you'd look down the seawall a little bit, and there'd be another 5 to 6 mullet, and they'd be sitting in one little spot, and another oyster would be billowing out a little bit of this smoke. So she started videotaping it. I went in and Googled it, and first I found a video of oyster spawning because I had no idea what this was. So I just Googled oyster spawning, and there's a video of it, and it's doing exactly what they said. And then I looked under the Florida State University on their website, found something about oyster spawning. Couldn't find any correlation with mullet eating the milk or the eggs or whatever, but they're obviously in there eating that. And it was just super cool because at a water temperature, it has to be no lower than 68 degrees. And they'll spawn from 68 degrees on and off again all summer through the fall until the temperature starts to drop below 68 degrees again. So there's no, like, specific time frame. Like, corals all over the world every,
kind of like,
like
a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, corals all over the world spawn on the same full moon. On the same 2 or 3 nights in the entire world, they all do it at the same time. Versus, I thought maybe that's some correlation, but no. But what it takes is a specific water temperature with enough phytoplankton in the water that the oysters are filtering out to produce enough energy to actually spawn.
What's phytoplankton?
It's just like a microalgae that's in the water column that's formed by basically enough ultraviolets in food. You know, it's one of the main bases of the food source for all living things in the ocean.
Gotcha.
But I called Barry, who lives on the water on Punta Gorda, asked him to go out to take a look on his seawall at the same time. He saw nothing. I called Lil, who lives up the canal, and she walked her seawall and saw nothing. So for some reason in that specific little corner, because it was also at the neighbor's yard too, it was doing that on some of his oysters. And it wasn't all of them. It was just a few couple here and there, you know, 10, 20 feet apart. But to see it, you know, I've not stared at oysters all day long, but I've been around the seawall enough and watched enough things. Never, ever saw anything like that. And she was completely amazed by it. It was just something unique and different.
So now you know your girl is into oyster porn.
Right.
So she's going to be out there.
Oyster Hub.
Yeah, Oyster right. Hub. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And
it was just, now, it was fascinating to see something different, you know.
Now, I have a question that I can't ask on the air, something about which mullets would be in front of which oyster. I don't think the station manager's giving me weird looks, so I'll shut up, move on.
It's just neat to see something else different in nature, because you know, every day we take stuff for granted.
I cannot imagine that I've seen that.
I've never seen that, no.
Yeah, it's just kind of neat to get enlightened. And you know, with all this crap going on, to see something new and different that gets you puzzled, that's amazing. It was just kind of a really cool moment.
Well, all I got to say is I'm a 60-some-year-old smoker who I know that it's not the only thing out there going to get me. There's a whole list of things that are, you know, going to get me. That's just another bullet in the gun. Bull terrier.
Bull terrier?
Bull turtle.
Oh.
You get in a hurry when you write, and it gets a little weird.
I know.
When we're driving up here, we're in the pickup truck, we're in Port Charlotte, the mighty KDW is up here in Northport, and so we've got about a half hour ride, depending on traffic, could be more, and, you know, Robert starts writing, and sometimes the truck is bouncing, so it looked like Bull Terrier, but I'll give him Bull Turtle. Did it Bull Turtle make more sense?
Yeah.
There's a Bull Turtle out there.
Yeah.
Like Bull Redfish, or is this something different?
Should be Redfish right above it, I think.
Yes. Pine Island Bull Turtle.
Yeah. Yeah, the...
Without commas, it looks like Bull Terrier.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's one spot where it gets really bumpy, so it seems like I hit that area. But either way, the Redfish have been really pretty impressive lately. I mean, they've been really good all winter long.
Monster reds.
Yeah.
Big, huge redfish.
I mean, from 28 to 33, 34 inches pretty consistently all winter, but now we're starting to get into more numbers again. You know, I had one customer it was in yesterday, and he did 22 redfish yesterday between Bull and Turtle Bay.
I talked to a guy, and I'm going to realistically say he caught 30-some redfish, but he says he caught 60-something.
Yeah.
I'm just cutting that in half because I know them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, going out and catching 15, 20, 30 redfish in an afternoon is not uncommon right now.
Yeah, and the coolest part is that some of the guys are doing decent on shrimp. Some guys are doing really good on some of the pinfish. But this guy that came in yesterday, he actually got he got a few on pinfish. He got some on shrimp. But everything else he caught, just on a plain old gulp shrimp. And he was throwing two colors. He was throwing a new penny and a white. It just happened to be what he had in his box, but he wanted to challenge himself because he was seeing redfish puffing off into the grass or off into a sand hole. So he just said, you know what? I know I can catch them on natural bait. I want to try to push myself a little bit because he's only caught a few redfish ever on artificial. So he wanted to challenge himself. And I think he said he did 8 or 10 of them on those gulp shrimp.
Now, one thing I'm going to look for out there right now is guys are complaining they're not eating the white bait. And that's not uncommon. Everybody has this idea. You got to have saltwater shiners, white bait, thread fins, whatever it is. It's not always the case. And right now, about half the time, they should be just slamming the white bait. It should be the bait of choice. Guys are having to cut tails off.
And even then, they're still not hitting it as much.
And we don't know what's going on. But if you're going out, try and take a dozen or two shrimp with you. I know you don't want to pay the $3 or $3.85, but if you're actually serious about the redfish, you better have a little bit of shrimp with you. Try and catch a little bit of bait fish. Try and find some pinfish, because last week we're talking the white bait bite is on. And we were saying white bait's going to be the best bait right now. And now they pulled a fast one on us again.
Yeah.
And we don't know what's up. The snook, it's all about the white bait.
Yeah.
If you're going after snook, white bait, white bait, white bait. But with the redfish, they're pulling a U-turn again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty strange.
Sneaky, tricky little buggers.
But it's just amazing. I mean, so many different people coming in, catching them in Pine Island Sound. The only place that's still quiet on them is Lemon Bay.
Really?
I'm still not getting hardly any reports out of Lemon Bay. The couple guys that are giving me some feedback say it's still pretty quiet up there. So either it's going off really good and they're staying tight-lipped about it, or it's still not so well. Not sure.
Permit in the Gulf?
Permit on the Gulf. They're out there. You know, just got to move out
all the way down by what? Sanibel?
Sanibel all the way up to Venice. Couple guys bumped into some fish off of Venice up there that were fishing on one of the reefs.
So you really got to find a reef, literally look for them.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to catch these big permits, and some of these are monsters.
Yeah.
And they're not always easy to get to bite, but you're literally coming up to a reef, shutting down, and looking in the water. You know, it's really cool if you've got like a piece of 4-inch, 6-inch PVC and you can put a plate on the bottom of it. Just literally you have to duct tape it on or something. And then you can stick it down. It's like having a diver's mask where you can look under the water.
Yeah.
And the water's clear enough if the waves aren't rippling where you can see down quite a ways. And one of the tricks the old timers did before we had all the fish finders and all that, you would take a 4-to-6-inch piece of pipe and put plastic or glass on the bottom of it, silicone to it, duct tape it to it, so that when you put it in the water, you could see past the sun reflection, past the waves, all that. And it's literally like being underwater. And they would just look for the permit there.
It's like a reverse periscope.
Exactly. And that was very common. People had those on the boat all the time. They used to actually sell factory-made ones. But, you know, nowadays you can just buy a piece of Lexan or something, put the pipe on it, draw a circle around, silicone it, little duct tape, and you've got a underwater peep scope, because it's not a periscope. What would you call that, RJ?
Boy, I don't know. That's one on me.
So, but have you ever done that?
No, I haven't. Now that you said it, I'm going to go try it.
It works really well, but you're going out into these reefs, you don't know if there's permit there or not. You're in a permit hunt. It's kind of like cobia. You're going to look the surface for the cobia. You're going to stick this thing underwater so you can literally look around, and you should be able to see at least 30 feet. And these fish are big. You're going to see them white in the sun.
Yeah,
you know, watch for movement.
They might reflect back like a mirror. I mean, I've been out there before where you can actually see them on a really calm day, and you see them down 20, 30 feet in the water, and they just... It's like somebody's down there, like shining an SOS mirror at you. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've seen that quite a bit.
Every now and then you get really lucky where it's a really, really calm, like first light in the morning, and you'll actually see their tails sticking out like little tiny points or little swords because they like to sit on the surface if they're not being harassed. But you just got to kind of be there at the right time and everything else. But the only tricky part about them is it's definitely going to be a shrimp or a crab almost every time. We've had a few phone calls for tarpon crabs because tarpon are starting to show up also out there. And what a lot of people don't realize about tarpon crabs, guys got to go out there at night and collect them in a net and dip them up and stuff like that.
They're hand dipped by a person walking along the mangroves with a flashlight. Reaches down, dips them out of the water with a net, puts them in a bucket as he's walking along in the pitch black of a mangrove shoreline. Now, name me one of you that would do that for cheap. Would you be willing to sell the crabs for 30 cents or 50 cents after walking around all night long catching them by hand while you're waiting? You're not in a boat. You're walking, waiting.
Yeah, you're wading through the water from anywhere from ankle to waist deep with a flashlight.
Oh, and when do sharks feed mostly?
Yeah. And alligators.
And alligators.
And not only that, but...
The wild hogs.
The mosquitoes and the no-see-ums.
Yeah.
I'll fight the sharks, the alligators, all that. They're big. I can deal with those. But the no-see-ums and the mosquitoes?
There's no way.
I'm out. Yeah. I mean, you want to see me as a real wuss? Get me in a thing of no-see-ums.
Yeah.
I'm squealing like a 3-year-old, you know? Oh, God, I'm okay with big stuff. I can't handle little stuff.
Yeah, definitely. You know?
If aliens come down from space and they're 10, 20 feet tall, they're all going to die. If they come down from space and they're 1/16 of an inch tall, we don't stand a chance.
That's right.
They're less than 1/4 inch high, we're all going to die. We ain't going to find them.
Right.
You know? Absolutely. I mean, little tiny things scare me.
To go back to the permit, do artificial crabs work at all, or any other artificials with permit? Because I don't think I've ever heard of anybody being successful with artificials.
We sold more fake crabs than you could ever imagine. All different brands, all different types.
Yeah, none of them seem to work well.
Yeah,
that's what
I've heard. Yeah,
they're really cool, but. They don't catch fish. Once in a while.
Yeah, every once in a while you get that oddball where a guy goes out and has one of those, either one really dumb fish or just that you could go 10 lifetimes to accomplish that. Because, I mean, one customer, he was out about a month ago, and he got like 25 permit between him and his two friends, but another captain actually was at another reef the same day and caught a bunch of permit, but none of them were over 12 pounds. They were all smaller. Right. And they all caught them on artificials and live shrimp, but they caught them on paddle tails, which surprised me, but not unheard of, but since they were smaller. But it seems like the bigger ones, once you get in that 15-plus pound range, it's pretty much going to be the natural thing as much as possible.
And as the old adage goes, artificial fake crabs, they're great at catching fishermen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How good they catch fish, I've never been convinced. I've never, outside of every once in a blue moon, but I think when they're hitting those fake crabs like that, I think you could put a rock on a string and still catch fish with it.
Yeah.
Some days the fish are just going to eat no matter what you throw at them.
Yeah, yeah.
I think those are the days where the fake crabs have worked.
Yeah, rare days when that happens.
It's like a little while ago there was a spider bass bait, and then there was the flipping the bird bass bait, and the
little duck bass bait.
Yeah, all these gimmicks and all these stuff. And everybody's got to have them. And it's nothing.
They don't catch fish.
We don't. And, the exact opposite is true. Most of them will catch a fish. But any more than a normal frog bait or a spinner bait or anything else, absolutely not.
No.
They're an average lure for, and they're going to be okay.
Well,
are they great? Absolutely not. Are they horrible? No. But they're okay baits.
But I've always wondered about the difference between an artificial crab and an artificial shrimp. I mean, you catch a ton of fish on a DOA artificial shrimp.
Yeah.
And for what's the difference? I mean, it's basically the same material.
Yeah.
Is it just that we don't know how to move a crab along like it should, and we can move a shrimp along like it should? I don't know what it is.
A woman came in, she's wanting lures, and I showed her the lures and everything, showed her what I thought would be appropriate, because we were out of the one she wanted, so I showed her what I believe would be the next best substitute. And she asked me about shrimp lures. So I do it all the time. You got to take people into the bait room. And once they get in the bait room, they're standing next to a 9-foot tank that's 3 feet deep and 3 feet wide. We've got a couple of those in the bait room. And you watch the shrimp swim forward. And I liken it to a World War II airplane. When they're swimming forward head first, they kind of go up and they kind of glide off going down and then they come back up. And explaining that to her, and then I take my fingers and I kind of like make a scissors motion in front of the shrimp to simulate something was going to eat them and watching them dart off to avoid the predator. Now, once they see these things, and you're welcome to do this. If you come into the bait shop, just say, can I look at the shrimp? And watch them swimming forward, scare them, make them jump back. And what this is about, it's not, if you've never seen a shrimp move, how are you going to imitate that? Once you have the actual natural movement of a shrimp in your mind, you can short cast the lure a little ways out where you can see it and start working on your technique to simulate what you saw in the bait tank. And then all of a sudden, there you got it. And you're catching a lot of fish. If you want to catch a lot of fish with a DOA lure, come down to Fish and Frank's, stand by the bait tanks, and just watch for a few minutes. Probably 2 to 5 minutes. You get it in your head how they move, how they glide. It's literally cool as heck. It's very therapeutic, too.
Mm-hmm.
Every single person who starts working there loves sorting the live shrimp from the dead shrimp. Because you're watching all the bait move, and you're working with them, you're picking it, and it's the most relaxing thing on the planet. Now, for the first 20 years.
Right.
For the first 20 years. After the first 20 years go by, it gets a little more dull.
Yeah.
No After doubt. The first 30 years went by, it was just a touch dull. But it is still, and to this day, I still will stop and just watch the shrimp in the tank for a while. And there's fish and crabs and starfish and, oh, God, you never know what you're going to find in there. No. Everything comes up with it. Everybody's wondering, tarpon.
Yeah, they're starting to show up out there in pretty good numbers. Captiva Pass down through Sanibel is by far the most consistent area. But they've been in Boca Grande Pass, and there has been a couple guys hooking them in the holes in the harbor.
Oyster spawning mullet.
Yeah. You know, it's just been kind of, they're starting to pop all over the place. Just got to go out there and keep an eye out for them and be ready for them. You know, there doesn't seem to be one bait other than if I'm out there on the beach or the pass, I'm definitely taking a shrimp with me because that is producing consistently.
It doesn't have to be a monster shrimp.
No.
Anything from a select, hand-picked jumbo. The problem with the names is you go to one shop, the hand-picks and jumbos are the size of a select in another shop. There's no standard size. Don't go by the name. Just see what the biggest ones they have is. Whether it's at Fish and Frank's, Fine Bait and Tackle, Rio Villa, you know, Englewood, wherever you are, all you're going to do is get the best, the biggest ones they got anyway. Right. But if it's about the length, the width of your palm and length, that's going to be a decent size for the tarpon. Yeah. Try to use, if you're using a J hook or a circle hook, you want at least a 5-aught.
Yeah. I'll agree with you on that.
It's got to go through the jaw. It has to make its way. If it's a circle hook, you're better off with a 6-aught than a 5-aught. But a 5-aught is adequate. But if you got a 4-aught circle, you're going to get a lot of hits and absolutely no hookups.
Yeah. No, you're probably not going to land the fish at all.
Can't fit around the jaw.
No.
So, you know, it's one of the things you have to realize. No matter how big a hook you think you want to use, you have to match the bait to the fish and the hook to the bait, but in this case, tarpon's its own entity. Minimum size 5-aught.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you start the music, I'll shut up. Until then, you're on your own. Look at, he's laughing at me. Where's the hard hat? How come we're not dancing to get out of here? That's it. Everybody party. Fish and Frank. Robert and the chair across from me, and RJ in the Golden Towers of Powers. Oh, God, I'm going to die here. So much fun we're having. Be safe, be healthy, have fun, enjoy your life.